step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Off Stage and On the Air, performance number 853. My name is, in December, Lisa Sheps, and I am joined once again by that fabulous guest co-host, Justin Smith.
Hello, hello. It is me.
It is you. You are listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby. This is streaming all around the world at KOOP.org.
Hurry, hurry, step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up. Feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh, yeah.
Dancing bears, painted wings.
It is Wednesday, December 3rd, 2025. On the show today, we have Ground Floor Theater and their production of Parade. Later on, we'll be talking to an actor from Broadway in Austin's production of Beauty and the Beast. And of course, we're going to have lively discussions of the world of theater in Austin, New York, Memphis, and other places that have basketball teams. Stick with us. Justin Garrett Smith.
Hello.
Welcome back to Offstage and On the Air.
Thank you very much.
You better watch out. You're going to make a habit of being here.
Well, that would be nice.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you're in the rotation now. So how are you? How's your day? How's your December going so far?
It's good. How many days into December are we?
Best month
so far of the year.
Best month.
I think.
Okay. Well, good. Well, I'm glad to have you back.
Thank you. I'm glad to be. How's your December going?
Excellent. I'm opening an amazing show with some decent actors.
Ooh.
Let's introduce the folks that have joined us here today. Speaking of those decent actors, we have the incomparable CB Feller. Hi, CB.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
And the equally incomparable Jason Rosenbaum. I lost it again.
Jacob. Hello, hello, hello. Yep. Jacob Rosenbaum.
What did I say?
Jason? Robert. Brown.
God. I did do that, didn't I?
He is involved in the musical.
You kind of look like
some
him.
Way.
It's true.
Yeah.
He
anyway,
the nose.
This is going to happen every time. It is the nose.
I love it.
Okay. So that song that we played, "Welcoming in December," was from Anastasia. Has anybody seen Anastasia?
The movie.
The movie.
The movie. Not okay. I'm not talking about the movie. I'm talking about the stage play.
Does the stage play have a little bat?
No.
No, Bartok.
What's a bat?
I won't.
No. Never seen it. Never seen the movie. But I have to tell you that I saw the Broadway tour as it came through here. Not a big fan of it. The costumes, the opening costumes of the old Russian, they're just gorgeous. Mm. And their use of video wall was really good. But as you may or may not know, I go see a fair amount of High School Musicals in the years. And I went to see a high school production of it, and it kind of made me change my mind.
Wow.
I liked it.
That's rad.
Yeah, kind of interesting.
Really,
I like it. Doesn't it normally has the opposite effect?
What high school?
I do not remember.
Ah.
I do not remember. So today we have to talk about sad news to begin with. And that is the passing of Tom Stoppard. Oh, before I do that, let me just say thank you to Kim Simpson, who's out there. And yeah, I know. CB just made a drop the mic kind of sound, or like
a bomb,
like a bomb dropping, because I started something pretty heavy and then I changed the subject, I guess. Anyway, I just need to thank Kim Simpson for another wonderful International Folk Bazaar. As always, I just love it when he plays the music, although I have trouble understanding some of the lyrics. But I'm pumped. Silence. Crickets. So, yes, Tom Stoppard passed away at, I'm turning this thing on, but I think it was 88. Is that right?
I just looked it up. It was.
I got it right here. Tom Stoppard. 88. See, that's. And I want to read the first paragraph of the obituary in the New York Times written by Bruce Weber. Tom Stoppard, the Czech-born English playwright who entwined erudition with imagination, verbal pyrotechnics with arch cleverness, and philosophical program with heartache and lust in stage works that won accolades and awards on both sides of the Atlantic, earning critical comparisons to Shakespeare and Shaw, has died at his home in Dorset, England. He was 88. I need to say that that was two sentences long. One of those sentences was only three words. It's a long sentence.
They packed a lot in there.
But I just thought that was a really lovely a lovely thing. I didn't realize it was one sentence until I said it.
Verbal pyrotechnics is good.
Yeah.
It's a shame we can't read our own obituaries.
Yeah.
I know. Well, and you know what? If you're famous, you kind of can because they pre-write them.
Well.
They do?
They do. Yeah. All the major newspapers all have, like, if you're a known person, your obituary is basically written. They just need to fill in the blanks.
Could I just submit mine now to a newspaper?
I don't see why not. You could. You know what? You could submit it to mine.
Okay.
All right. Good. So he wrote notably, his first big show was in 1966 with Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead.
That's a good one.
Which kind of makes me sad because my first two cats that I had in 1977 were Rosencrantz and Guildenstern.
Aww.
And coincidentally, they're both dead.
Play was written about them.
Right.
Yeah, I think so. No, let me make sure. Say something, Jacob.
Hi.
My okay, I
Jacob.
Can hear you.
Oh, you can hear me?
Okay. Yeah, sometimes my headphones don't hear some of the mics. And I get paranoid that you're not there. So he also wrote The Real Thing, which won a Tony in 1982. Arcadia, that has been done here, was just done here recently. And then a few years before that, Austin Shakespeare did it. Did not get to see it. Are y'all Tom Stoppard fans?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. CB? Faces don't work on the radio.
I know, but... That was the point.
I know. But I don't let you get
call
away.
It out.
I don't let you get away with it.
I like Rosencrantz and Guildenstern, but that's all I know.
You know what? I've never read Rosencrantz and Guildenstern.
I haven't read it. I've
Shakespeare in
it.
Love.
I have not watched it. Well, that was the next thing I was going to talk about.
I've seen that. Okay.
He wrote Shakespeare in Love, which I liked a lot.
Yeah.
Yes.
With even though Gwyneth Paltrow, that's who was in it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
She gets a lot of shade
for her goop.
Goop. I don't know. People say deserved, but I don't know. I honestly don't have an opinion. But he wrote a play in 2006 called Rock and Roll. Have y'all heard of this one?
I do not know that one.
I hadn't heard of that one either. I think it was Mel Gusso, New York Times. He wrote this. Get out your handkerchiefs, if you please, for Rock and Roll, the triumphantly sentimental play by Tom Stoppard. Oh, it's Ben Brantley. Wait a minute. That sentence does not commute. The words Tom Stoppard and sentimental are intimate proximity. Mr. Stoppard is the intellectual magician who turns academic pursuits like philology, etymology, and onontology into Quicksilver theater. People don't cry at his plays. They ponder. Yet anyone who looked hard enough could always see the fragile, hopeful heart beneath the cerebral glitter in Mr. Stoppard's work during the last 40 years. I think that's kind of an interesting thing.
Yeah. Although I would say Shakespeare in Love is pretty intimate and sweet.
I do too. I actually forgot that he wrote it until I read the obituary.
Mm.
Because it doesn't seem Stoppard-esque to me.
Bastrop Theater did it pretty recently.
Shakespeare in Love?
Mm-hmm.
They have a stage play of it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Who knew?
Yeah.
Did Tom Stoppard write the stage play?
I think it's obviously.
Adapted from the movie.
Yeah.
His last play was Leopoldstadt. Has anybody seen or read this play?
No,
but I'm familiar.
They did that Zach recently, didn't they?
No, they were thinking of Austin Shakespeare did a staged reading, which I saw. But he did not... excuse me. I have a frog in my throat. He did not know his Jewish roots until the 90s. His family fled Germany or Poland right before the Nazis took over. And so Leopoldstadt was sort of a tribute to his Jewish roots. If you've seen it or read it or anything about it, it deals with a German Jewish family and the act of assimilation at the time of Hitler. Actually, it spans a lot of years. I think it goes from the 1800s through the 1970s or something. And that's interesting. That was 2020. So it won the Tony. It won the Olivier, among other things. It's kind of the show that would be really good at a theater that I know of.
Which one?
But It's got the same size cast as our parade does.
I was going to ask, it doesn't have like 30 characters.
It's got a huge cast, and it's not really all that doubleable. That's a word I just made up. Okay, I have to be very conscious of time because we don't have a lot of time. Anyway, rest in peace, Tom Stoppard. They are dimming the lights for him. So as y'all may or may not know, the dimming of the lights on Broadway has gone through this radical change. They now have a committee to decide who does and does not get the lights dimmed for them. Oof. They now do a communal dimming every month for a group of people that die. But every now and then they will choose someone to get a solo dimming. And Tom Stoppard was one of those people. So he is getting a solo dimming, I think, on the 7th.
I would say that's deserving of Tom Stoppard, for sure.
Yeah, well, certainly he's the accolades and all the tributes to him. I mean, if you just take the New York Times as an example, they had, I think, 5 articles about him yesterday. So I'm going to see if there's anything. Oh, let me see if I have this in here. No, I don't. I think he had, like, I thought I had his IBDB page here. Because his number of Broadway shows, like 15 or so, but they're all killer. Okay, that's it. All right, we're moving on to the next thing, to more...
19
Broadway shows. There you go.
More than me.
One more than you. You have 18, right?
Yeah, that's right.
All right, so Justin has been tested on this, and we know how Nicole Shiro feels. Mm. How do y'all feel when I say... the word or the name Paddington?
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Warm.
Warm?
I have mixed reviews right now. Uh-oh. Because I'm thinking of something in particular.
The musical?
The musical.
Oh. Yes, which right. just opened in London.
Yes, there's a villain song in it that is absolutely a bop.
I've only been able to find one song that's published.
Is it, I've just seen a bunch of TikToks on it. Oh, it's about like skinning animals. She's really into like taxidermy.
I don't know. We're going to play that song at the end of the show. It's called One of Us. No, you're talking about the villain song.
The villain. It's so good. I recommend everyone go on like a TikTok or something and watch it.
Go on a TikTok.
I don't know.
All right.
Dead things.
I just think of the bear.
Well, that's what this is. So to refresh our audience memories, the bear is a puppet. That's operated by 2 humans. One is inside the puppet and one is off stage operating the electronics that Ooh. Operates his eyes and mouth. And that puppeteer that's off stage is also his voice. So to be clear, I have the names of those people. James Hamid, he provides the voice and the remote puppeteering, and Tara Zafar, who she plays the creature, and she's in the creature. This is directed by Luke Shepherd, and it is written by Jessica Swale, and it is based on the original Paddington books. Are you showing the picture?
Yeah,
I have the picture right here.
So good.
I'll show it to everybody. Let me show it to the audience.
It looks incredible. Yeah. Yeah. Looks especially like... when it's like moving.
And there is, and Justin talked about this. I haven't seen it. I got castigated by Nicole Shiro for not watching the. There is a BBC interview with Paddington Bear that is supposed to be just amazing.
It's so good.
Yeah. So that's that. Let's see. We're gonna have to pare everything down. Death of a Salesman is coming back. Have y'all heard about this?
Yes.
I did hear about that.
With Nathan Lane?
With Nathan Lane and Laurie Metcalf. And Nathan Lane, what a talent.
Oh, yeah.
I think... underknown talent. I mean, people think of him as kind of a clown and a Zero Mostelli kind of guy, but he's quite the actor. You might remember that he did a turn on Broadway in The Nance that got a lot of critical acclaim. I believe that was written by Harvey Fierstein, maybe? I could be wrong about that. But anyway, so Willie Loman, he's going to play Willie Loman, and Laurie Metcalf is going to play the wife, Linda. Christopher Abbott and Ben Ayers are the 2 sons. I don't know which is Biff and which is Boff. What's the other name?
Happy?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Anyway, previews are supposed to start on March 6th. The show opens on April 9th. Directed by Joe Mantello. And evidently, he and Nathan Lane have been talking about this for 30 years.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
This one is going to be a little bit, he's envisioning a production that is more abstract, which could be interesting. It's not, I wouldn't think of Death of a Salesman as a abstract play, and timeless. It's going to be at the Winter Garden Theater to play for 14 weeks. It was originally opened in 1949. So we talk about Death of a Salesman. Every time Death of a Salesman happens, the person playing Willie Loman wins the Tony.
Wow.
Pretty much. So here's the test. The last time Death of a Salesman was on was in 2023.
So
do we remember
ago.
Who was in it?
That was so recent.
It was recent.
Oh, I...
Wendell Pierce.
Yes.
And Sharon Clarke. And I'm pretty sure he won. In 2012, Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Oh, I knew that.
I didn't know that.
Andrew Garfield was in it. He played Biff, and it was his Broadway debut.
Oh, that's cool.
Lovely.
In 1999... I'm sorry, what?
I said, what a treasure.
True. Mm-hmm. True. Mm. True, true, true. 1999, it was Brian Dennehy. In 1984, Dustin Hoffman. And John Malkovich was in it,
oh, that's
playing
cool.
Biff, as his Broadway debut.
And they all won the Tony?
I think I can't. I didn't. I didn't
and
actually.
2026, it'll be Nathan.
It'll be Nathan Lane. 1975 with George C. Scott, and in 1950 it was Lee J. Cobb. Or sorry, 1949.
Well,
there you go.
It's like a good omen.
That is Death of a Salesman.
I want to see that John Malkovich one.
Yeah, so here's the last thing penultimate thing I want to talk about is I just saw, I did not know this was going to happen, a remake of Amadeus. Ah. And I saw this because the trailer was released. And if you want to see the trailer, you can go to offstageonair.com and there'll be a link there. But at first I was kind of angry. Now I'm less so, but I thought it was another movie and I'm sorry. You don't want a remake. Amadeus movie, but this is a limited TV series, which could be interesting.
Oh,
is
I
it
do like limits
a musical or a drama about
that's a, it's drama. It's oh, just okay, like see, Amadeus was not a musical.
It just had
a lot of music in it, but no singing. Well, there's a little bit of singing. There's one. Yeah. Little tiny itsy bit of singing. So anyway, that's kind of interesting. And you can look at the trailer at offstageonair.com. Finally, Brian Stokes Mitchell just won an award given by SMU, which, as y'all know, is in the great state, is in the state of Texas. And he won, he was named the recipient of the 2026 Meadows Award. It's an honor, it honors artists' accomplishments at the pinnacle of a distinguished career. Part of that, he does a residency in Dallas, including a master pass, and he's performing along with their choirs in March. I found that was interesting.
Yay, Brian.
Yeah.
Yep. So he's also, he does a lot of charitable work and activism work. He's been the chairman of the board at the Entertainment Community Fund, which used to be called the Actors Fund. I did not know this. And he's a founding member of Black Theater United. So... Ooh. Is he currently in Ragtime? I know he was. He did do it. I don't think he's in the current version of Ragtime. Other winners included such people like Arthur Miller, Angela Lansbury, Martha Graham. I don't know this person, Stephen Sondheim, and Wynton Marsalis, who I have met.
Wow.
Legends. So legends.
Worked with. Yeah. Legends, absolutely.
I've heard of them.
So one of the shows that Brian Stokes Mitchell was in was Man of La Mancha. And here's Brian, along with Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio. And here's Brian Stokes Mitchell singing Dulcinea from that show. We'll be back.
Dulcinea, Dulcinea.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and Justin. And we could have just talked forever, I think, but we need to talk to our guests for the reason why they were there. And interestingly enough, we have a full house of guests. I'm a guest as well.
Wow.
Cause this is Ground Floor Theater's production of Parade, of which I am directing. And Justin, you're in it, aren't you?
I think I am.
You are one of the actors?
I am one of the actors and singers.
Okay, awesome. Well, I'm glad that you're here. So you can just switch out of co-host mode and go on to guest mode at this point.
Okay, I'll be over
good.
Here.
Okay, good. and C.B. Feller, who yes. is playing Lucille Frank. And I'm going to read it. Jacob Rosenbaum.
That's me.
Who plays Leo Frank. Do one of you, any one of you, want to tell folks what Parade is all about?
Sure. So Parade is based on historical events that happened in the early 20th century. It's about Leo Frank, who was a superintendent at a pencil factory. On April 26, 1913, one of his workers, Mary Fagan, little girl, was found dead in the basement of the factory. And that kind of started this journey that took Leo Frank into court, and he was wrongfully accused of the murder in the end, and he was sentenced to how far do you want me to go?
That's about what we should end with. Okay. He was
yes.
sentenced to
it's
what?
It's about his trial, his relationship with Lucille Frank, with Atlanta, Georgia.
Right. So we should say he was a Jewish man.
Correct.
In a part of the country in Atlanta, which wasn't necessarily that nice to Jews. And he was also from the Northeast. Mm-hmm. He was from Brooklyn. Not very nice Brooklyn. To those people as well. So it's an interesting thing. And Jason Robert Brown and Alfred Urey decided, well, that's going to make a really nice musical. Mm-hmm. So this wouldn't be like a parade that we would want to necessarily go to. I mean,
not
that's
a Mardi Gras.
Yeah, it's not a Mardi Gras.
Not a Macy's Day.
Okay. No. And CB, you are playing Lucille Frank.
Yes.
What can you tell us about that character?
Well, Lucille is a strong and powerful woman that goes through a journey. At the very beginning, you might think that they call her Mousy, very typical of women in, 1913. Mm-hmm. They're very amenable and they do what they're told. But she has a deep love for her husband and believes in his innocence and wants to do everything in her power to make sure that he gets out of jail mm-hmm. and does not receive the ultimate death.
Sure. He kind of she kind of breaks the mold of what women, the role a woman was to play in that
yeah, era. She did a lot of things. The real Lucille and of course the ones in the play. She wrote a letter to the governor to ask for clemency for Leo. And as she spoke to reporters, she corrected reporters. Mm-hmm. Really spoke out on his behalf and was an active part of the case.
Yeah. Jacob, tell us about Leo.
Yeah.
Who is he? Was he?
Leo Frank, he was actually originally born in Texas, and then they moved to Brooklyn.
He was that is a
months.
Very interesting fact. Mm-hmm. He right? was actually Central Texas, very mm-hmm. close to here.
Yeah.
Wow.
But he grew up in New York, smart guy. He went to school for engineering. He moved to Texas to work at a pencil factory.
Georgia.
In Georgia, sorry. Texas, yeah, Georgia. We live in Texas. He moved to Georgia to work in a pencil factory, and that's where he met Lucille. He was very smart, very hardworking man, very much kind of into his work. There were some people that kind of called him cold and hard, but actually if you read kind of his letters and kind of his legacy, he was a very sweet man and had a very loving community. But he did feel like an outsider in Georgia, even the Jewish community, he felt like an outsider. They did things a little differently. They were a little more assimilated into the Southern culture, mm-hmm. which was different growing up in New York. He faced a lot of kind of trials and tribulations.
Yeah. Initially, I thought Leo Frank's family was from Eastern Europe and came over later on in as a immigrant. But no, he was of German, Jewish mm-hmm. German descent. And what typically happened, the first wave of Jewish immigration, those German immigrants came in and they totally assimilated into American culture. Mm-hmm. The wave of Jews that came in around the turn of the century held on to their Jewish culture, which is sort of describes Leo and Lucille.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So y'all are going to sing a song, are you not?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. So I guess I'll set the song up. This happens towards the end of the towards the end of the show, and as CB talked about, Lucille goes on this transformation from dutiful wife to kicking A mm-hmm. on Leo's behalf. And this song sort of is when Leo figures it all out, right? Mm-hmm. And it's called All the Wasted Time. Can y'all hear through your headphones?
Yes.
All right. Well, here we go. This is Jacob Rosenbaum and CB Feller singing All the Wasted Time from Ground Floor Theater's production of Parade.
I will never understand what I did to deserve you, or how to be the man that I'm supposed to be. I will never understand, if I live a thousand lifetimes, why you did the things you did for me. Just look at you, how can I not be in love with you? What kind of fool could have taken you for granted for so long? All the wasted time, all the million hours, pushing you away, building up my walls, all the days gone by, to glare, to pout, to push you out, and I never knew anything at all. I never knew anything at all.
I will never understand how all the world misjudged you, when I have always known how lucky I must be. I will never understand how I kept from going crazy, just waiting there till you came home to me. Now look at me, now that you're finally here with me, now that I know I was right to wait and everyone else was so wrong for so long. All the wasted time,
all the wasted time,
all the million hours, years on top of years, still too proud to crawl. All the days gone by, to feel that I don't satisfy, and I never knew anything at all. I never knew anything at all.
All the wasted time,
all the wasted time,
all the million hours, leaves too high to touch, roots too strong to fall.
You guys, y'all just sends goose shivers, goosebumps. That's a beautiful song.
Yes,
that music, obviously, not obviously, is written by Jason Robert Brown.
Yeah, it's kind of obvious.
It's kind of obvious. But he is, he's just a wonderful,
brilliant
composer. Justin, you're in the show as well.
I am.
You play said media person, newspaper
yes,
man.
Britt Craig.
Tell us about him.
Well, Britt Craig was a reporter in town that was, I don't want to say down on his luck, but bored, and was looking for a story to sensationalize and whip Georgia into a frenzy. And he takes the opportunity, with Leo being arrested, to whip the town up against Leo and sort of perpetuate stereotypes that we're familiar with and other horrible things.
Yeah. So, I mean, this, it's very timely, showing the media circus of the time. And, you know, we are sitting right now experiencing a media circus as well.
Yes.
I should say that the opinions expressed here on Offstage and On the Air, not necessarily those of Co-op, its board of directors, volunteers, underwriters, or anybody else. It's just me. I'm supposed to say that at the top of the show. but yeah, so the themes of the show ring true currently, wouldn't you say?
Very much so, unfortunately.
Unfortunately. Yeah, so it's a beautiful piece. What else? I'm trying not to, since I know the show as well, but I want to hear from y'all. What are the things that we're not talking about in this particular production that we'd like to tell our listeners?
Good question.
Anything?
It is a heavy show.
Mm-hmm. Bring your tissue.
Yeah, bring your tissue.
And I think also a large element of the piece that maybe we're not representing here is also the children in the play, the child labor. That was happening and maybe still in some capacities, as well as the way Black people were treated.
Yep.
And it was very the way politicians will use media to sway opinions of the people. There was a lot that was already happening in Georgia among Black community, and they felt like that wasn't enough and they needed to do something different this time. Targeted the Jewish culture.
Well, great. When do y'all open? When do we open?
Tomorrow.
December 4th.
Tomorrow night. Tomorrow. And I do have to tell folks that this show just looks amazing. The talent just in this room, this is 1/6 of our cast here. And this is just, if I do anything well, it's casting. And this cast is really, really amazing. I'm excited to show Parade to the rest of Austin. We do indeed open tomorrow, December 4th, and we close on the 21st. We added a performance on Sunday. So, and folks can get information at groundfloortheater.org. Thank you guys so much for joining me on, and Justin, who's now wearing his co-host hat.
Oh, I'm back.
for joining us on Offstage and On the Air. I should say also that the show is co-music directed by Adam Roberts and Dr. Ellie Jarrett Shaddles, and choreographed by Richard Cerato, who I like to call Richard Cerato. And he loves it when I do that. And our creative team is also phenomenal, if I do say so myself.
Agreed.
Well, thank y'all so much for coming on the show. Break many legs.
I'll break two.
Break two.
Bust away two knees already.
Yeah, keep your knees intact.
Oh, yeah.
That's an inside joke, everybody. That was Justin Garrett Smith, C.B. Feller, and Jacob Rosenbaum of Ground Floor Theater's production of Parade, playing December 4th through 21st at Ground Floor Theater. For more information, groundfloortheater.org/parade. And we will let you hear a little bit of what Justin, oh my God, sings in the show. This is Britt Craig's number, Real Big News. We'll be right back.
Big news, my savior.
We are back. You are listening to Ground Floor, no. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and Justin. It's fun, sort of fun to interview ourselves. You didn't ask any questions.
Well, I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. You had taken your co-host.
Come back.
I should have said that I should let you ask some of the questions, but I didn't. Let's talk about what's happening locally. You remember before we do that, I do want to just point out one thing, which is the Stage Austin is doing a Christmas card musical, which is a little cabaret, and it's got, I'll read it. A Christmas card musical transforms the entire theater into a glittering cabaret, complete with immersive projection, live music, themed cocktails, and a pre-show party from the moment you walk in. Featuring Austin's best talent, Emmy award-winning actors, B.I. and Payne award-winning choreography and direction by Mary Ellen Gross Butler. And it's written by Tyler Rouse and Clifford Butler. You can get information. Oh, I should tell you when it is. It's happening December 4th. That's tomorrow through the 23rd. Don't go to the Stage Austin's website because they have no information about it on there. So I got all this from atxtheater.org. All right, let's go through the calendar.
Okay.
I'm going to start because you started last time, right?
I can't. Sure.
Yeah, I'm going to say yes. All right, Zach Theater has a Charlie Brown's Christmas through December 28th.
Zach Theater also has a Christmas Carol through January 3rd.
Austin Playhouse has got Peril in the Alps. Peril in the Alps playing through the 28th of December.
Broadway in Austin is doing Beauty and the Beast starting December 2nd, yesterday through December 14th.
Grackle Jack is got The Exorcist December 11th through 20th at the Crafts Box. They will be on the show next week.
Tex Arts is doing White Christmas through December 21st.
They will also be on the show next week. Georgetown Palace Theater is doing Frozen through February 1st.
Ground Floor Theater is doing Parade, opening tomorrow, running through December 21st.
You know, I should say, I'm going to put my Parade hat back on. This is, we did this show, but the very first show Ground Floor Theater produced was a concert version of Parade. It's our 10-year anniversary, and so we decided to do that. And if folks are interested, Joni Lorraine just did a wonderful article about Ground Floor Theater's 10th year anniversary in Broadway World. You can find that at broadwayworld.com. Okay, I lost my place. Leela has got When the Tables Turns. It opens on Friday, December 5th, and plays through the 7th at Trinity Street.
City Theater is doing Tuna Christmas, starting December 5th, running through December 21st.
Penfold Theater is also doing Tuna Christmas, December 12th through 28th.
Alchemy Theater is doing A Christmas Memory stage reading at the Central Library, starting or only showing on December 7th.
Yep. And Inspired Minds out in Buda is doing A Christmas Carol from the 5th to the 14th. Auditions are Alchemy Theater. It's doing the Robber Bridegroom. Those auditions are on the 22nd of this month. Ground Floor Theater is auditioning for Yellowface on the 8th. Austin Shakespeare's Full Season auditioning on the 6th. Frontera Fest has Morris and the Road to Spirit on December 13th. And Filigree Theater is auditioning for Take Care of My Friend on the 4th. And I should say that is a play written by Kathleen Fletcher,
yes,
who is also in Parade. Tex Arts is auditioning for Rock of Ages, and that happens January 11th, 2026. I got all that information at atxtheater.org. And now we're going to run right into Today in Theater History, kind of. I'm going to blast through it really fast because I need to start the next part. So today in theater history, we have Streetcar Named Desire opened in 1947. Wow. Camelot, 1960. Kismet in 1953. The Cher Show opened in 2018. Once Upon This Island Revival, 2017. Liza at the Palace opened in 2008. And the Farnsworth Invention opened in 2007. That's interesting. I looked it up, but we don't have time to talk about it. And birthdays are Julianne Moore and Alfred Uhry, who wrote, amongst other things, Parade. But one of the other things he wrote, which I found interesting, is The Robber Bridegroom, which Alchemy is auditioning. So let's hear from The Robber Bridegroom, Steal with Style. We will be right back.
I guess you wonder.
All right, we're back. You're still listening to Justin and Lisa.
Hello.
I want to make sure we have time for this whole thing because we had a really great time talking to one of the actors. And specifically, I'm going to tell you, I can't remember his name, Kevin Ligon, who's playing Maurice in Broadway Across Austin's The National Tour of Beauty and the Beast. Are you a Beauty and the Beast fan?
I saw it on Broadway when I was a child, uh-huh, and really enjoyed it. It's not my favorite.
It's a good one for kids. Unlike other, like The Lion King, which adults, I think, can find very enjoyable.
Yeah.
This one's more for the kids. But it's a lovely piece. The costumes and Broadway sets are,
yes,
almost worth
the
costume.
Some of the songs are beautiful.
Yeah. So let's listen to my interview with Kevin Ligon. Here it is. I'm so fortunate to have joining us via Zoom, Kevin Ligon. He is playing in the Broadway Across America's tour of Beauty and the Beast, playing here at Bass Concert Hall. Kevin, welcome to Offstage and on the Air.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
I have to start right away by acknowledging, because we are here in Austin, Texas, and you are in the national tour and done zillions of Broadway shows, but you are a Texas native.
I certainly am, and proud of it.
Well, but unfortunately, you're not an Austin native, so we forgive you.
Sorry about that, but grew up, born and raised in Dallas, Texas. And most of my family is still there.
Great. Well, we were talking before we went on the air that you toured with Hello Dolly back from your college days. You took what we now call a gap year from school at SMU to perform in Hello Dolly.
Yeah, we didn't know that was what it was called back then.
But I know, we didn't.
Yeah, I fortunately was cast in the ensemble of a big national tour of Hello Dolly starring Carol Channing, the original Dolly, which was kind of wild. And I took a year off from, I was going to SMU, and I took a year off to do that tour, which was life-changing in a lot of ways, but not the least of which was getting to work with alongside Carol Channing. And, I feel very lucky.
Was that where you got your equity card, that show?
No, I had actually gotten it the year before at the Dallas Summer Musicals.
DSM, we call it.
DSM, yes. And I'd done My Fair Lady and George M. the year before at DSM. And then they, Tom Hughes, who was the producer of Dallas Summer Musicals, was one of the people that put together this national tour of Hello Dolly, which was how I ended up auditioning, because I had worked for him the year before. And so that started at the Music Hall in Dallas.
So I know, as you know, back in the day, it was not that easy to get your equity card. There was no getting points or anything like that. You had to be offered a contract to get it.
Right.
So that's quite a coup back then.
No, yeah, it was. I'm very lucky that I got to start kind of a little bit ahead of the game by starting my professional years with an equity card, you know.
Well, we're not here to talk about Hello Dolly or George M. or any of that crazy stuff. We're here to talk about Beauty and the Beast. I'm unfamiliar with this show. What's it about?
You are unfamiliar with, you're one of the few.
I'm lying. Nobody is unfamiliar with this show.
No, it's about love and friendship and not judging a book by its cover and all those wonderful values that you want your children to learn. But it's such a beautiful story told in such a way that it appeals to children and to people my age and to your parents, your grandparents, that's our audience. I mean, we look out at the audience and it's such a broad spectrum of people that are laughing and crying, and it's just it's a great show. I'm so proud of it.
And this is the anniversary season.
Yes, it's the
25 years.
We're a little beyond the 30th anniversary, but the tour is called the 30th anniversary North American tour, because I guess eventually we're going to Canada, not this year, but so it's more or less the 30th anniversary of the stage show. The film, the animated film, was 1991. The stage show was opened in 1994 on Broadway.
Which I'm proud to say I've never seen the film.
Oh, really? Oh, wow. Well,
I'm old and I don't have kids, so there was no reason for me to look at it.
I have to say, I feel that the stage show is superior to the film. And
of
I'll
course
tell you,
it is.
When you're watching an animated film and you see a clock talking and a candlestick dancing around, and singing a song, that seems sort of just like, oh, that's normal. It's the world of Walt Disney and, inanimate objects speak and talk. But when you're watching the show, you're seeing real actors inhabiting those inanimate objects. And it becomes so powerfully clear to you that what this story is that these, one part of the story is that these inanimate objects want to become human again. A curse has been put on them, and they've been slowly turning into these clocks and candlesticks and teapots. And that aspect of the show, and I say this from the experience of having seen the show back in the 90s, that I was just not really prepared for how moving that was, that these little inanimate objects are human beings and they're trapped. And, you know, when Chip says, "Will I ever be a real boy again?" It just kills you when you see a real human being saying that line. And so I think that's one of the great assets of the live show as compared to the one, you know, definitely wonderful animated film that was the first animated film ever nominated for Best Picture. I mean, that's amazing. And there haven't been any since then, maybe one or two. But come see the show, because you're going to, if you've never seen it and you've only seen the film, it's just going to knock your socks off. I totally believe in this wonderful story we're telling.
Very, very well said. And you are you're playing Maurice, who is one of these enchanted people.
No, I'm not an enchanted person.
No, you're okay.
Maurice is Belle's father. I'm one of the few humans that are human the whole time. Yeah, no. Yeah, I play Belle's father. I've actually played Cogsworth, which was an enchanted inanimate object, in an earlier production that was done at Paper Mill Playhouse in New Jersey. But no, in this production, I'm playing Maurice, Belle's father.
That is very well said. I think Beauty and the Beast, not only is it a lovely story, but the musical is just so beautiful. The costumes are gorgeous. The scenery is gorgeous. Of course, the story and the music is fun. So, we're seeing, and you are in Austin for a little while. How have you been to Austin before? I'm guessing you have.
We used to come down every summer and stay at this place called the Chariot Inn that I think was on I-35. I don't think it exists anymore.
Probably not.
It was like a motel, you know, it was a fancy motel that had a neat swimming pool that had a bridge over it, as I recall, as a little kid. But we used to do that every summer because my dad would come down. He was a high school principal, and he would come down for this like meeting of Texas high school principals, I think. I don't know. We were just in the swimming pool at the motel. And yeah, we would come every summer. So one of my earliest memories of Austin is we went to the drive-in. This must have been 1972, because that's the year this movie came out, and we saw the Poseidon Adventure.
Oh my!
At the drive-in, I wish I remembered the name of the drive-in, but we would always come in the summer.
I am so sorry that the younger people these days are not able to experience the drive-in as we did back then.
Because, you know what?
They're coming back, but they're different than what we had. Right. It's a little box that you hung in the window,
right.
It's just a different and sneaking people in the trunk of the car.
Yeah, those were the days.
And it was always usually the B films, and Poseidon Adventure was kind of a B film when it came out in a lot of ways.
Yes, but it sure had an impact. Yeah. Just to tell you, we were in Detroit. We played Detroit a few months ago. And there was a drive-in movie theater in Dearborn, Michigan, where our hotel was. And I drove past it every day. And I think they were showing like Halloween, or it was probably right before Halloween. But they seemed to be showing older movies. But I didn't go, but it was nice to see a drive-in movie theater functioning.
They are indeed coming back. One more thing, we'll just keep circling back to the reason why we're talking, which is Beauty and the Beast.
Oh, yeah.
This is the 30th anniversary. Were there any changes to the production or the script or anything to celebrate the 30th anniversary?
Actually, I'm glad you asked that, because the entire creative team, maybe minus one person, has returned and revisited their work on the original production, including Linda Wolverton, who wrote the screenplay and the book of the musical. I kind of had another go at writing the book of the musical. She went through and refreshed it somewhat. They have cut a couple of songs. They're songs that I don't think anybody remembers except the diehard fans. A song for my character has been cut, which I'm perfectly fine with. But I'm let's not dwell on that. I'm just saying they basically, she sort of streamlined the script in a way that it sort of gets to the point so much in a much clearer way. And I will say that the original Belle, Susan Egan, excuse me, came to see the show when we were in Nashville and loved the new revisions to the script. But it's nothing major. Like, it's nothing that if you're not a diehard fan, you probably won't even notice that it's changed. But it just, the show is a tighter show. It moves quicker and tells the story, I think, in a much more clear way.
Yeah, still, this is a really good reason for those familiar with the show to come and see it again and get a little different feel. And also, you know, when you make changes and you freshen it up, I think it the cast and creatives and everybody have a different kind of energy, which brings that back to the house. And everybody, the whole energy is renewed a little bit from something that is 30 years old and can, like, I saw Chorus Line towards the end of its run in New York, and boy, was that a tired show.
Well, but this is not like that at all. I mean, this is the nice thing for us, the actors that are in it, was we weren't being handed something that was like a template that we had to follow every little way that the original people acted these roles. We were given a fresh lease on life, you know, to sort of just go for it and create it for ourselves. And so it felt in a lot of ways like working on a new show. It's not new. It's definitely the show that the story that everyone knows and the songs that everyone knows. But like some of the songs actually have been reorchestrated. And I know like Belle's song Home was given a sort of different feel, which people seem to love. Susan Egan as well loved that. And I can't say enough about Kira Bell Johnson, who's playing Belle. She plays my daughter, and she's just fantastic. You've got to see her. She was born to play this role. Same for Fergie Philippe, who plays the Beast. These people have taken these roles and made them their own in a way that is so wonderful. I just love them so much, and I want everyone to see them in these roles and see them in this show. They're just great.
Well, that is great. I could talk to you forever. Unfortunately, we are out of time and we'll have to go. But people will look forward to seeing you here at Bass Concert Hall in Maurice. I was about to say Phantom of the Opera, which you've done, by the way. That was your Broadway debut, wasn't it?
No, it wasn't. It wasn't my debut. I went into it well into the run and played one of the managers.
Oh, that's your first IBDB listing.
That's because they list them in order that the shows opened on Broadway. Any show that I did on Broadway, it was the first show. It was the earliest one that opened, but I wasn't in it when it opened.
You taught me something. Many years in. Yeah. It ran for a few years.
My first Broadway show was The Secret Garden.
Oh, which we were talking about before we went on the air. And I wish we could talk about it more, but we totally have to go. So thank you so much for joining us on Offstage and on the Air.
Thank you, Lisa. It was just a pleasure.
Okay, take care.
Okay, bye.
That was Kevin Ligon. He plays Maurice in Broadway Across America's Beauty and the Beast at Bass Concert Hall, playing December 2nd through 14th. For more information, austin.broadway.com.
No, we're not odd, it's true. No family could be saner, except one uncle who... Well,
okay, I'm going to fade this puppy out because we're just about out of time. I just have time to say thank you once again.
Thank
goodbye.
You.
Do you enjoy doing this?
I love doing this.
Wonderful. Well, I will see you tonight at Dress Rehearsal for Parade, where folks can go to, if they want to, groundfloortheater.org and get information.
We open tomorrow.
You open tomorrow. Stand by for Tracy Schultz and What's New. As always on Wednesdays, he is going to tell us what's new. And we are going to go out with that song from Paddington, the musical. It is called One of Us. We will see you next week when I look at what's happening off stage and on the air. Bye, folks.
There's 100 different reasons why he shouldn't stay. I won't make any excuses if you refuse to find a way. So if you want to make him leave it, then before you do, there's something I should say.